Originally titled Harvest the Benefits of Gardening, this is an edited version of one of the past seminars at Hadley School for the Blind. The full seminar may be listened to online at www.hadley.edu/pastseminars.asp. George Abbott, Dean of Educational Programs and Instruction at Hadley, moderated a discussion between one of the school's instructors, Ed Haynes, and Kathy Austin, BGS, Coordinator of Adult Rehabilitation Services for the Chicago Guild for the Blind. They discussed garden planning, choosing and identifying plants, and use of appropriate tools and hardware. This edited version brings us Kathy Austin's part of the discussion, in which she discusses gardening specifically for the visually impaired. An avid gardener for over 35 years, she's made many adaptations to continue gardening due to gradual vision loss from retinitis pigmentosa. Her ideas are excellent, and we thought you might enjoy putting some of them into practice as you tend your gardens this spring.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us to talk about gardening today. It's a pleasure to be here. You might be asking yourself, well, why should I garden when I can't see or see very well the fruits of my labor? Well, think about the things you're offering, not only to yourself, but to others as well. Gardening is great exercise, both mentally and physically. It's a way to work thoughts through your mind while listening to the birds and feeling that warm sun on your back. Getting down on your knees and pulling some weeds or turning some soil over with a shovel is a great way to work some of those muscles that you probably haven't worked in a while. You're creating something enjoyable for others to look at and to enjoy. You're also creating a habitat for birds, bees, and other wildlife that are so important to our fragile environment. It's a way to grow your own healthy, non-toxic food that can be shared with other people at harvest time. And gardening is also a good way to get involved in your community and to meet new people. So we'll be passing along the practical steps of planning, planting, and caring for your garden, but we're also going to offer suggestions on how to do it as a visually impaired gardener. We'll start with planning your garden. One of the most important things was the sun exposure. That can be critical in planting a garden. So to determine how much sun your garden will receive, go outside and feel on a sunny day and feel the sun. Feel how warm it is. Do this at different times during the day and keep a journal of that information so you can record how much sunlight a particular area is getting in your garden. You think about trees. If you're standing underneath a tree in April, it could be very sunny and feel very nice and warm. But come June, when the tree is in full bloom and all the leaves are out, you will have a very shady spot. So keep that in mind as well. You want to think about access to your garden. Are you putting a garden bed in the middle of your backyard where you might become disoriented and not be able to find it? That's happened to me quite a few times. You might want to mark your new garden with a wind chime for sound. You might want to use an arbor to find it as a big landmark. Path to your garden by using pebbles or bark or patio stones that will give you a way to get out to your garden. You want to think about your path. Is your path easy to navigate? Walk it and think about when you're carrying tools, buckets, pots out to a particular area. You want to make sure that it's clear of any objects and it's an easy way to get there. You also want to make sure that it's accessible for a wagon or a wheelbarrow if you're carrying large bags of topsoil or compost. Keep in mind your water source. You don't want to have to be carrying buckets a long way to water a particular area of your yard. About a border, if you're putting an in-ground garden, you want to think about the border and what you're going to use to mark it off with. Keep in mind a couple things. Keep in mind contrast so you can find it easily, and also think about tripping hazards. Sometimes if you would use a landscape timber, it's raised up a little bit and you might not see it if the grass is a little bit long, so you want to think about that. One of my favorite things to use is flagstone. It's non-toxic, it's flat, it's a grayish-white color, it shows up nicely against the dark earth or your green grass, and it looks pretty nice too. A raised bed, Sometimes you can get these stone retaining blocks at the home center stores, and you can make a bed that's a little bit higher. That way it will be easy to find and really doesn't have a tripping hazard involved. Okay, well, when choosing your plants, there's a couple of things that you should keep in mind. Color, contrast, texture, and fragrance. To have a monochromatic color scheme is one way that I do it. This really helps when you're going to the garden center and picking out your plants, your flowers especially. If you're picking out all red plants, it makes it much easier. It limits your selection because it can be extremely overwhelming when you get to that garden center. Easy for independent transplanting. For instance, if you pick geraniums and impatiens and you pick all red in varieties, the geranium leaf is large, round, and fuzzy, where the impatient is small, oval, and smooth finish. So you can independently transplant those plants into your garden. Does help the overwhelming selection at the garden center, as I said. Two, a color that you see better. Depending on your vision issue, you may see just black and white. You may see reds or very vibrant colors. So think about that when you're choosing your plants. But the contrast against the flower versus the foliage. Shasta daisies are a good example of color contrast, so you'll be able to enjoy those. Shasta daisies are very dark green foliage, and then they have very big white with yellow center flowers. Think about planting white, or plants that have white flowers. They look very nice in the evening, and you'll be able to pick them out against the dark sky and the dark earth. You want to consider texture. You're going to be touching your plants and inspecting your plants, and so you'll want to enjoy that process. So one of my favorites is called Artemisia. It's a light silvery gray-green color, but it's very soft to the touch. So while you're doing your inspections, you can think about that when picking out your plants. You want to think about fragrance when you're choosing your plants. A couple of my favorites are ornamental lilies. They smell terrific when they're in bloom in July. And you can, as the wind blows, you can, depending on the direction where you're sitting, you can smell them from several feet away. Another very good smelling plant that you'll be able to enjoy as a visually impaired gardener. After a rain, it really, really has a wonderful smell. Lavender is another one. Rubbing the leaves, you'll be able to enjoy that fragrance. One of the things in choosing your plants is spacing, and it's kind of difficult to determine what you're going to plant in a difference in a space when you can't see it very well. So I recommend using pots or different objects of different sizes, maybe a bucket or that simulates the adult size of the plant. You could use tomato cages and kind of arrange them in a way that you'll get an idea of how many plants you'll need so that when you go to the garden center, you've got a good idea of what you're going to need. You might even want to use Microsoft Excel on the computer. You can use that to figure out how much space you have and how many plants you'll need to fill it up. Any resources on the internet for choosing plants? Find out how big a plant is, what its adult size will be, and that will be good guidelines in making your list to go to the garden center. You can also go to your nursery or garden center and ask them for their assistance. Resources for choosing your plants are university extension locations. Many universities will have an agricultural extension. You can ask a botanical garden. Many communities have garden clubs. They even have helplines by telephone that you can just call up and ask a question about a particular plant. That's a resource that you should definitely take advantage of. It might be a really good thing to do is to sign up for a garden class in your local community. Many park districts or garden clubs do have classes. It's a great way to meet other people who are more experienced than you, and often those people who are experienced are willing to give you a hand to choose your plants. Make sure that you make a list and try to stick to it. It can be extremely overwhelming seeing all those new plants in the springtime, and you want to buy everything. But if you keep a list, it'll help you narrow down your choices and come home with the things that you originally had planned on purchasing. You might want to take a sighted friend along with you to help you pick out your plants. Purchase bare root plants from a mail order catalog. These are plants that just have roots and very little foliage. You'll get exactly what you're looking for. However, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to identify those plants when you get them in the mail. So you might want to ask a sighted friend to help you sort the plants. They'll have to be taken care of pretty much as soon as you receive them and get them into the ground fairly quickly. I think we're going to go on to tools now. There's some different things that you can do for your tools. The first one, when you choose your tools at the home center or garden center, you want to choose tools that are very high contrast. If you're gardening mostly in a lawn area where it's a dark green grass, you want to choose tools that are a lighter color. If you're gardening more on a patio, then you want to maybe choose tools that are a darker color. If you find a tool that feels good in your hand and you like the way it works and it's not the right color, wrap some tape around it with a contrasting color of your environment. That'll help you find it much more easily. The other things you might be able to do is use a nail apron. You can purchase these at a home center store. Tie it around your waist and put your tools in it while you're working. Another use for that nail apron is to tie it around a bucket and put your tools in the nail apron around the bucket. Then the waste goes in the bucket and the tools go into the nail apron. Many a time I have been gardening and haven't quite done that, and I throw the tools in the bucket and dump the bucket into the yard waste, and then I'm digging back in that yard waste to find my tool. So this is a nice way to keep them separated. Think about your bucket as well. Make sure that it's high contrast. I have use a lot of white buckets that contrast nicely with the green grass and the dark soil. But if you're gardening on a patio, you want to think about a darker color that maybe will be easier to see. On your knees digging in the dirt, you want to make sure that you're keeping that trowel or your fork close by. Make a habit of putting it right next to you or right in front of you so you can find it more easily. Larger tools, you want to make sure that you put them up against a wall, the house or the fence. Put them up close so that you don't trip over them and that they're a lot easier to find when you need to go back and retrieve them. Some other tools that I'm going to suggest you keep on hand, and some of these I'll mention now what their uses are, but others I'll go into a little bit more detail when we talk about planting, have some bamboo stakes available. You can usually purchase these at the home center or garden center, and they come 20 or 30 in a package. You want to have some twine available. You also might want to have a furring strip. A furring strip is a piece of lumber. It's 1 inch by 2 inch by usually 8 foot long. They're a couple dollars at the home center store. I'll tell you a little bit of how that's used later on. But that's a cheap, easy thing to have, and it's very useful. A portable radio is one of my favorite things to garden with. They even make them now that are especially for gardeners, and they come in bright colors. I have a red one, and it's great to have that. You can play whatever kind of music you want or listen to your favorite talk show, and you keep it close to you while you're gardening so that if you have to leave your spot to go retrieve a tool or answer the telephone, you know exactly where you're at when you leave that radio on. You can find your spot really easily. To orientate yourself in the garden, you can use anything from rock, small bird baths, fountains, a container of flowers. It helps you just know where you're at in your garden. Talk a little bit more about your soil selections, about using prepared potting mixes, especially when using containers. It's very difficult to, for instance, tell the difference between topsoil and peat moss. You know, they look both dark brown. They have the same consistency. So to identify those bags independently may be troublesome. So use the prepared ones that are available in the garden center. It'll save you time, and in the long run, it'll just be much easier. You might want to think about, when you do go to the garden center or purchasing your potting mix, to ask a sighted person. Some of them come with water-retaining polymers and slow-release fertilizers, and you're going to want to know what's in them for your particular plants that you're going to be growing, so you will need some sighted assistance there. compost, use it. It eliminates having to use a lot of chemical fertilizers, which eliminates the problem of having to read labels and measuring the proper ingredients. So use a compost. You can't really use too much. And so there, it really makes it so much easier, and you're getting really non-toxic harvests when you use it, especially with vegetables. About all I have on that, I think we're going to move on to planting your plants and seedlings. Well, I'll start a little bit about talking about seeds. There's a product that's available. It's called seed tape. And if you're very particular about your spacing and you want to get a perfectly aligned row, you can use seed tape. Seed tape is two sheets of very thin paper with seeds pasted in between, and they are at the correct spacing. So all you really need to do is lay that piece of seed tape down on the ground, cover it with some topsoil, pat it down, water it thoroughly, and you can have some seedlings popping up in about, you know, a week to 10 days. Bulbs come in the same kind of format. You'll find them in a more of a cardboard type container. They're already arranged. All you need to do is dig a hole to the depth that the package recommends, put the container in the ground, cover it with some dirt, water, and then in the spring you'll have a nice selection of tulips, daffodils, and crocuses. Some seed packets. There's a couple of ways that you can use seeds. Seeds can be very small and sometimes a little difficult for people who are having vision problems to deal with. So I mentioned a furring strip before in the tool section of our webinar here. And what I use that furring strip for, remember this is a 1x2 8-foot piece of lumber. Make sure not to use a treated piece with wood preservative. You don't want to leach any chemicals into the ground. You can cut this furring strip to the desired length that your row is. Lay it down on the ground and then use it as a straight edge and use your trowel similar to you would use it as a ruler and a pencil. Put the furring strip down, drag your trowel against the furring strip, and it'll make a little trench. And here's where you can gradually plant your seeds right using the furring strip as a guide. Lay your seeds in that small trench that you've prepared. Cover it over with some soil, pat it down. But before you pick up the furring strip, mark the end of the rows with your bamboo stakes. Put a stake at each end of the row, and then use a piece of twine to connect the two bamboo stakes. This will mark you, give you a tactile guide to where you've planted those seeds. One other thing I will mention for a safety precaution, you might want to pick up some ping pong balls. Cut a small slit in the bottom of it and place that ping pong on top of that bamboo stake. If you're on your hands and knees gardening and pulling some weeds, thinning some seedlings, you might not see that if you have some vision issues, that stake pointing out of the ground. So if you do happen to poke your face or poke your eye, you're going to be poking it with a ping pong ball rather than a sharp stake. The ping pong ball also acts as a visual contrast. The white against the dark green foliage of your plants and the dark earth can help you easily identify those seed rows. If you're missing the row exactly with your seeds, if you get a few that are straggling outside of that row, it's okay. Nature isn't perfect. We aren't either. And you can always go back and thin those seedlings later. Fancy seed row markers. I was in a gift shop the other day and saw some really cute seed row markers in the shapes of carrots and radishes. These are a little bit more expensive, but they can be used at the end of your row to mark what crops you've planted where. Those are, as I said, a little more expensive, but they can be used year after year. You can also take the seed packet that the seeds came in and attach it to your bamboo stake. You might not be able to read the writing on the packet, but you'll be able to maybe identify it from the picture. If you're planting some seeds in, say, a perennial garden, I like to put zinnias throughout my perennial beds. But it's difficult to find those seeds after you've planted them, and they're going to need a little extra water, those seeds, to get them to come up. So I mark those areas where I've planted with some garden art. I'll maybe put a small bird bath in the center and plant the seeds around the bird bath. This gives me a tactile marker so that I can concentrate my water in the area where it's needed most. When using transplants, you want to work a small area first. Dig 3 or 4 holes at a time to determine your spacing. If you need to adjust your spacing, you can then put your plants in after you've determined the right spacing. Planting in containers, you will want to use a small cup or even the plastic pot that the plants come in to transfer the dirt from, or your potting mixture from the bag into the container. This helps you get more of the soil into the pot. It has a lot less waste. And now I think that's all I had for this section. We'll move on to plant care. Getting to know your plants, feeling them, touching them, give them a once-over once a week. Learn the structure of your plants so that you can determine what's the plant and what's the weeds. You can tell the difference between a flower that has just bloomed and that of one that's almost spent by if it's crunchy or if it feels wilty. So you'll know just by touch when it should be removed. Feel for pests and diseases by touching your plants. If you've got leaves that have got holes in them, well, maybe the slugs are getting at them. So you want to make sure that you are touching them so you know what's going on. In regards to thinning, you want to use your fingers to determine the right spacing. If you think about your fingers and in each joint, it's about an inch long, you can use that as a guide to cutting off the seedlings that you might not want. And with mulching, too, you can determine the depth of your mulch by using your fingers, and you can tell pretty much by the feel where you've spread your mulch and where you haven't. One thing about knowing your pests and knowing what to look for and knowing what they feel like will really help you in determining how to treat pests and disease later on. Well, I want to thank everyone who tuned in today, and I hope that this was informative and learned something, and thank you for coming by and visiting with us.
And our thanks as well to Kathy Austin for sharing her expertise and to the Hadley School for the Blind for making this presentation available to us. The mission of the Hadley School is to promote independent living through lifelong distance education programs for individuals who are blind or visually impaired, their families, and blindness service providers. Be sure to visit them online at www.hadley.edu and take advantage of their many outstanding educational opportunities.